This time on Weather Brains, the challenges of trying to forecast November weather. James Spann has great distrust of one computer model's suggestions.
It's model madness, absolute model mayhem out there in the longer range.
Also this time, it's time for
Storm Alert Extreme.
Your chance to learn all about severe weather.
We're going to be doing some basic and advanced storm spotter training.
And that's not all. Check this out.
If you come to the Storm Alert Extreme and if you are trained by Brian, then you can stick around and go to the International Auto Show on us. Doesn't cost a dime.
The rumors, meanwhile, continue to swirl about what else might take place.
J.B. Elliott's going to do a donut-eating thing. He's going to eat 50 donuts in 2 minutes.
Also this time, an Indiana woman's crusade in the wake of tragedy.
I would sure like to think that somebody in Montgomery would latch onto this and maybe consider for our state.
Plus, once again, fall colors have James taking roads less traveled and seeing spectacular scenery.
I drove down to the Cahaba River, and I was blown away at how pretty it was down there.
And you'll meet a North Alabama resident who takes in nature in an up-close and personal way, tent camping in sub-zero wind chills.
We're all so stressed in our daily lives with everything so hectic, and it's a chance to just sort of get rid of all of it or just throw it off the top of the mountain, so to speak.
It's all coming up. Welcome to episode number 41 of Weather Brains, the netcast that is all about the weather. It's produced by a bunch of weather geeks in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm one of those geeks, David Black. Thank you for being with us. Also with us this time, the primary weather geek of ABC 3340 Birmingham, James Spann, along with co-geeks Brian Peters and J.B. Elliott. Mr. Spann, what have you to tell us this time?
It's a lovely night in weather geekdom out here. It's raining and doesn't get any better than this. I mean, it's just a soaking rain. I like it.
Should we get Brian to sing "It's a Rainy Night in Alabama," or would that not be something we'd want to pursue
in
public?
We might wait until the end, so at least some people stick around and listen to this.
You got that right.
Tell us about your trip to the Cahaba River today in Bibb County.
It was excellent.
What did you do?
Well, I spoke at West Blockton High School today, which is in Bibb County, and being the guy that I am, as you all know, I like the roads less traveled, so I went the other way. Most people, you know, come back through the interstate to Birmingham. Well, I drove down to the Cahaba River, and I was blown away at how pretty it was down there. I have written many times about that stretch of the river. That is where the Cahaba lilies bloom. In the spring, in April and May, and many, many people go down there for that, but I've never been down there to watch or to view the fall colors, the fall foliage colors, and it was just stunning.
Is it peaking down there?
It really is. This is the best week, I think, to go, and the Park Service, they've got this nice road now, runs down the banks of the Cahaba for about 5 miles, and just opportunity after opportunity of stopping and getting some great shots. So, often when you think about fall foliage in the state, you think of the Little River Canyon, and you think of Mount Sheehaw, and, you know, Lookout Mountain, and all that part of East Alabama, which indeed is beautiful, but I just haven't thought about that. So, if you want a really nice place to see the fall colors, just go down there below West Blockton and go down that little road by the river. And I was the only guy out there. I mean, for miles and miles. I was the only soul. And It was just tremendous. It was really good. So I strongly recommend that for a little side trip maybe on a Saturday.
Okay, so I wasn't following the directions here real closely. For somebody who seriously wants to do this, taking off from Birmingham, say, heading down I-5920 out of Birmingham toward Tuscaloosa, what do you do?
Yeah, you get off at the Centerville exit. That's U.S. 11 and Alabama Highway 5, and you follow Highway 5 when it forks off from 11 going south for about 5 miles, and then just follow the signs for downtown West Blockton. And once you're in West Blockton, you'll turn left on Cahaba River Road, and you'll wind up at the river in about 5 miles. And right before you get to the river, you'll see that the road and the sign there where they've got some brochures and stuff, and it's a great place to go in April and May for the lilies, but I've learned today it's a great place to go for fall colors, too.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Spann. I've known you for over 20, almost 25-something years like now, and I just want to know, is there a nook and cranny in Alabama you don't know about?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I think my weak spot is the southeastern part of the state and the general area between Dothan and Montgomery.
The wiregrass?
You get down to places like, Barber County and, Union Springs and Eufaula. Yeah, I've been there, but I don't know that much about it. So, I guess I need to take a southeast Alabama. One of these days, JB and I are going to drive down to Eufaula and do some sightseeing.
Eufaula can be very pretty because it sits on a bluff over the river there.
We spent a couple of vacations at Eufaula State Park. Beautiful. And, of course, the old homes, the ancient homes all over the town of Eufaula, just beautiful to look at.
And you, Mr. Elliott, are somebody else who amazes me with your geographic knowledge of the state. Do your years in the National Weather Service help strengthen that? How is it that you know so many of the little tiny spots in north and central Alabama as well as you do?
I don't know where all of the potholes like James does, but we had to know geography when we were doing updating weather radio every few minutes. And
James knows where all the rusty signs are on the corners of the roads and stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite drives in the whole state, as I've mentioned many times before, is to go up the Paint Rock River. You go east of Huntsville on U.S. 72 to the community of Paint Rock and turn north, and the road parallels the river. And you get up into some real deep valleys and canyons up in the extreme northern part of the state and finally up to the Tennessee border. And there's a place up there called the White Cliffs of the White Cliffs. It's some white cliffs very much like you see in England. And I have not been into those because it was private land when I was up there last and you could not get to it. But I think it's been opened up now.
Deliverance.
I want to know if some of these sites and special places you guys know are going to be a feature chapter of JB's book, Scatter Brains and Scatter Showers. Should be.
Absolutely. Sure.
Well, it sounds like everybody's really enjoying autumn. We are recording this on a Monday, and as alluded to previously, it's a rainy night across a big chunk of central Alabama. James, what are we in store for in the next 5-7 day time frame? How does it look right now?
Well, I think the baffling part of this thing is next week, about 7, 8, 9 days away from now. This week, we'll just get this soaking rain tonight, and the rest of the week will warm up by Thursday and Friday. We'll be way up in the 70s and maybe pushing 80 on Friday.
Wow.
And then probably have a few showers late in the weekend. It's model madness, absolute model mayhem out there in the longer range. And I have great distrust of the primary American global model, the GFS. It wants to build this ridge and keep the storms away from us, while the Europeans strongly suggested a severe weather outbreak here the middle of next week. But with all the inconsistencies, it's just hard to call. One of the things we look at, David, is the North Atlantic Oscillation, and that thing is neutral to positive. If that were strongly negative, that would suggest maybe a big storm, but kind of a mystery out there. I call it voodoo land because it's all voodoo. You know, there's just no skill in a specific forecast beyond 7 days, but as we've talked about on the show before, this is fall tornado season, and I wouldn't be shocked if we had a little severe weather threat at some point in the next couple of weeks, so we'll just sit back and wait and watch as always.
And not only are we getting into fall tornado season, but this is a very important weekend in central Alabama for folks wanting to be aware about severe weather. Mr. Peters, you have a role in what's going on this weekend, I think.
I do.
Well, rumor has it. Maybe I'm mistaken.
I was hoping to go down on the Cahaba River on Saturday.
Well, you can't do that, man.
Yeah. The International Auto Show is in town, and they have been exceptionally wonderful folks because they're sponsoring, I guess you'd call them a sponsor. I hope I'm not using the wrong word there, James. But
they're partner.
They're a partner, okay, in providing space at the BJCC for Storm Alert Extreme. We're going to be doing some basic and advanced storm spotter training, and James is going to be talking about instant messaging and how the sky watchers can play a role, because we need eyes and ears. There's no doubt about that, especially the eyes. And we know what tornadoes sound like. We just need the eyes to tell us what's going on. And that's going to be from, we're going to kick off at 9:30. And I'm not sure, we're working with them right now. I do believe, and James, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I do believe if you come to Storm Alert Extreme that you're going to get into the auto show afterward. without charge, is the way I understand it.
Yes, that breaking news just came down this afternoon.
Huge.
Pretty cool. If you come to the Storm Alert Extreme, and if you are trained by Brian, then you can stick around and go to the International Auto Show on us. Doesn't cost a dime. So I think that's a great deal. Like Brian said, the Birmingham Automobile Dealers Association, they've been really good to work with this thing, and hopefully we can kind of set up a permanent partnership if this all works out and do this again. But I one of the things I want to stress, David, there's a good chance that many people that listen to this netcast have been trained before. I mean, look, this is for weather geeks, and more than likely, if you're a real weather geek, you were trained as a Skywarn spotter years ago. I recommend everybody go through training once a year because, number one, we learn a lot about the science and we have new things we can present. Number two, we all forget a lot. I mean, there's things you learned last year that you have forgotten about. So I strongly recommend everybody getting a refresher course once a year. And we only do this once a year. If you want to see Brian do it, this is your chance. So we encourage everybody to come. We'll start at 9:30. And I've just got some instructions on which door and all that. If you go to the blog and just click on Storm Alert Extreme, we've got the directions on there. A little confusing with the auto show going on that day. We'll have one open door for Extreme, and that's near the cascading fountain there at the BJCC. So hope to see a lot of people there. And if you're interested in the Skywatcher program, you need to be there too. And it's great for EMA people, kids that love weather. It's just a good deal. So we hope to see a lot of people there. It'll be a lot of fun.
And I want to make sure I understand correctly again, for folks who have never been to one of these and who might be a little unsure about wanting to attend one, this is a real good primer, basic, introductory, and then for folks who do want to refresh or go a little bit more advanced, you're covering that ground as well.
Yes.
Ms. Peters is. I'll let him expound on that.
Yes, we're going to, in the morning, we're going to do a session, basics, so kind of the foundation, some of the visual clues that are there. And I'll probably do what I typically do is to tell people, you know, there's no ABC. You don't look for A, B, and C, and then you're going to get T, a tornado. It doesn't work that way. But the atmosphere does give us a number of clues, and those clues can help us, can help storm spotters, people on the ground, confirm and give us information about what the storm is doing that radar can't, since radar shows us what's happening within the storm. We still need to know what's happening at the ground, and that's where the storm spotters become absolutely essential and critical to the entire warning process. So it is going to be—it's going to be interesting, and I try the best I can to take what is a relatively technical topic and try to bring it down into terms that I think people can understand. And hopefully it will be worthwhile, and I have to underscore what James said, that, you know, every year you need to go through the refresher and to bring it all back again, and this is a great time to do it. There's so much focus on the spring season. It's nice to have this partnership with the International Auto Show so that we can do this in the fall, since for the last, 6 years, the fall has been our biggest season, biggest part of our tornadoes outbreaks have come in the fall over the last several years. So may change this year, may not, we'll see.
Let me ask you guys this too. Traditionally, I think it has been a weak spot in the severe weather detection process to get ground truth, as you call it, from some of the more rural areas where we have a lot of population in the cities, you get a lot of people seeing something. Is that still an issue that you're trying to address, folks out in the more rural, out-of-town spots?
Absolutely. Severe weather, you can never have enough reports. But having, and JB and I and James, not officially putting out a warning, but JB and I have been in that hot seat where we're putting out the warnings. And if you can have good radar signatures and combine that with ground truth or observations, you can put out better warnings. And that's what we want. That's really, you know, the whole goal of trying to do the Skywatchers is to help with that element, the ground truth, because the ground truth isn't always there. I mean, look at some of the storms occur at night. You can't see nearly as well at night. You can't see at all at night. I've done some of that. You just can't. And so we need all the reports. When storms get into populated areas, you get lots of reports. It's the less populated areas where we really need those reports to help the Weather Service put out better warnings and to help us in the television side of things convey to people the urgency and the need for seeking shelter and getting people to take the protective actions.
And Brian, that's the tree here where we have all these rolling hills and tall trees to where it blocks the view. Ground truth is essential.
And David, you know, I look at a list of where we have our sky watchers, and a pretty good percentage of them are concentrated in urban areas. And we are really interested in finding sky watchers and observers in places like rural West Alabama. You know, great examples would be Pickens County and Sumter County and Lamar County. These are counties in the Mississippi state line, the point of entry for severe weather. And our radar beam here shooting at a half-degree tilt, that beam is, 7,000 feet off the ground out there, and we just need somebody down low. So hopefully, as we expand the Skywatcher program, we will pick up some in rural areas. And internet access is a problem too, David. You know, for people that live in cities, you know, you can get broad bandwidth. You can get DSL or cable, but if you live in a rural area, sometimes you don't have that, and that's a whole other issue. So I think as bandwidth increases out in the country, we'll gradually get more people on with us.
And that's where amateur radio can play a big role, too, if folks pursue getting into amateur radio in some of the rural areas. We've had a lot of success. And J.B. Elliott, you can probably give us some thoughts about that from your years at the Weather Service. Was that not helpful at times for folks in some of those rural spots to get information?
Even back in the super outbreak back in April 1973, ham radio operators on that particular night played a key role in keeping us updated on what was going on where, especially after the situation in Guin where all communications were knocked out, and we leaned heavily on them.
Okay. Well, real good. Well, that is this Saturday, the 11th, and the doors open, I understand, at 8:30. Is that right, Brian?
Yes. So, we plan to be there at 8:30 and have everything set up and ready to go. We're going to try to start right at 9:30.
And I have to say, too, I'm really impressed at what you guys have done to help boost the attendance on the special door prize. I would never have thought of this myself, but it's going to be pretty neat. With everybody attending, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, everybody attending is going to be given a key, an ignition key, but that one of those keys will turn the ignition to James Spann's 1970 Ford Country Squire station wagon. You remember the kind with the fake wood paneling? And they're going to get that car. That's going to be outstanding.
That's like the vehicle that Clark, what's his name, drove in the movie Vacation. Clark W. Griswold. And we have a Hugo to give away, too. A Hugo. Remember those?
There's really some extra reason to attend, and Brian's going to be right in the thick of that, so we know he'll do a great job. Don't feel the pressure, Brian.
Also, before we start the show, David, J.B. Elliott's going to do a donut eating thing. He's going to eat 50 donuts in 2 minutes. So
plain or chocolate iced?
Chocolate filled. Yeah.
That sounds sinful, but delicious.
Yes, I'm supposed to sin several times a year.
And this will be one of them. Reclassify this netcast into the sci-fi or fantasy arena.
Well, we should probably get some listener input. You know, if you ever want to email us, leave us a voicemail, you can. I'm really, in all seriousness, we really enjoy reading, listening to what folks have to say. We like to know, for example, where you listen to us. Because, James, you've gotten some emails before that suggested we have folks listening outside of the Birmingham metro area, right?
Oh, yeah. I guess the most longest distance email from somebody listening to this was a serviceman in Iraq. That's pretty cool.
That is.
You never know. And I'm telling you, with these podcasts or netcasts, whatever you call them, once you get used to listening to them, they become pretty addictive. And I still love local radio, but I have an iPod that's got a little plug thing in my vehicle where I can plug it up. And that's how I listen to this show. On my iPod driving down the road, listen to my pastor's sermons at church that way, listen to some weather geek shows and technical geek shows. So it's a pretty cool thing here. So I bet you there's people out there far and wide away.
Well, this gentleman, Michael Moss, that reported on that Evansville tornado earlier tonight, He lives in Indiana, and he listens every single week, and he's a storm chaser, so he's very interested.
Michael, if you listen every single week, we're concerned about you, buddy. But
that's scary. Very scary.
That is scary, isn't it?
Maybe better not go there. Of course, that says something about the people putting on these netcasts every week, too, but we probably better not go there. I want to jump back for just a second to something we were talking about at the beginning of the netcast, and that was just enjoying all the fall colors, as so many folks are doing and enjoying autumn in different ways. You might think that taking a drive, as we talked about, to see some of Alabama's fall colors is the thing to do, and it sure is around here. But here's something of interest. For one group of Alabama residents, they spent last weekend really getting to know nature and taking in those sights close up in a different sort of way. Rex Free is a video producer and ham radio operator up in Moulton in North Alabama. He and his friends decided it was time to get away from it all, and they knew how to do it.
I have always enjoyed the outdoors, always enjoyed the woods and backpacking, and so this weekend, a group of about six or seven guys, we went up to a mountain in Tennessee, it's east of Cleveland. We hiked up 6 miles to the top of a mountain at 4,222 feet and camped, and we experienced a sunrise and sunset like no other, saw some absolutely beautiful autumn leaves on the way up, and it's just a very invigorating weekend. It just does a lot to you. You know, it mentally challenges you, physically challenges you, and the reward is just overwhelming with beauty.
What were the fall colors like?
The colors are just past peak in the lower elevations, and that was sort of odd to go from greens, beautiful colors on the lower levels. As we hiked up, it turned to all orange, yellow, reds, just absolutely gorgeous. And then at the summit, all the leaves are gone. So it's almost like transcending a month's worth of the seasons, you know, or going from fall quickly into winter. And the first night, the wind up there was pretty brutal. We had about a 20-mile-an-hour wind with a 25-degree temperature.
Ooh.
But, yeah, it was pretty brutal for the first night. But the next night, there was no wind, hardly, and absolutely beautiful full moon. It's just breathtaking. It's something that not everybody, you know, can enjoy, and it's hard to explain what it does to you. You know, highly recommend it.
So it was really you guys just back to nature.
Absolutely, it's just you know, we're all so stressed in our daily lives with everything so hectic, and it's a chance to just sort of get rid of all of it, or just throw it off the top of the mountain, so to speak. And you know, it puts everything in perspective. You know, your relationships with people, friends, the guys. We had a great time. All the stress is relieved, and I'm a new man for about a week going back to work. You know, it just really, really does something to you.
And you guys were out there by yourselves. I'm taking it there was nobody else around you.
We didn't see but two people in 3 days. It was very, very, very remote. If we had any problems, we would probably be an extra 2 or 3 days out. And, of course, being a ham, I enjoyed it with a high altitude up in a mountain. You can hit repeaters all around. And I had some conversations with some guys in Rome, Georgia, and over in North Carolina, and just an overall great, great, great experience.
So a quick trip, but cheap, easy, and very, very relaxing.
Absolutely. I went up and I went with six guys. We stayed in a hotel one night, and I spent $100, and I had the time of a life. So a trip I'll never forget. And so, you know, for $100, it made me feel like $1 million. And it just you know, shows you that you can enjoy life without having to spend an arm and a leg.
Was this tent camping?
This is tent camping. Everybody has backpacking gear, tents. Generally, everybody carried around 45 to 50 pounds. And we use what we call a buddy system, where if you have six guys and two of you carry water filters, and this filters the spring water up there to get all the bad bacteria out. Two of us carry stoves. Two of us carry saws. And we work as a buddy system when we get up there. And that way everybody's not carrying so much supplies. And we use backpacking food, which is freeze-dried, and it's less weight. And all you do is, you know, add boiling water, and you've got instant beef stew or macaroni or spaghetti, that type thing.
So you were kind of roughing it.
We were roughing it. It's not for everybody, and that's what's so unique about it. You go to these places, and there's very few people that are there. You know, you see nature at its premium best. Not many people go do this kind of stuff.
Sounds like you'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. I would pack in 2 days and be gone tomorrow. I might need to drag my wife with me, but I would do it in a heartbeat. I highly recommend it for anyone, for the physical and the mental and also just the absolute beauty you see.
I think he had a pretty good time. Have you guys ever done any rough it trips like that to go back with nature?
I've never been backpacking. We used to do tent camping back when we were first married and couldn't afford much. But now I have a travel trailer, so JB?
Yeah, we've done a lot of camping out west because Judy's dad and mom were fanatics about getting out in the open country, so we've done a lot of camping out there. And I remember one day in central Idaho, we went back on the Middle Fork of the Salmon River. We turned off of the paved road about 7 a.m. and did not come out of that wilderness until about 5 or 6 in the evening. And during that stretch of time, we did not see a single human, not one.
That sounds like a fabulous trip.
Yeah.
And I know that James has loaded up in that Country Squire wagon a time or two and headed down to Gulf Shores.
Yeah, I mean, with that kind of vehicle, I mean, who needs a travel trailer, you know? I mean, that doesn't get any better than that.
Anyway, I thought that was a pretty cool trip that Rex and his pals took. Speaking of foliage and enjoying the color, here's a website that we have mentioned, I think, a time or two in some past netcasts, but in case you missed it, for Tennessee foliage lovers, it's fall.tnvacation.com. fall.tnvacation.com. There are a lot of sites out there on the internet you can look at to figure out the best places to go, but quite frankly, here in Alabama, it sounds like listening to Weather Brains, these netcasts with you guys talking about the different parts of the state is one of the best ways to know what's happening right around here, and this is definitely the time to be out taking in nature and enjoying the color, and I hope you can get a chance to do that soon before it's
over. I could spend the next 25 years on the back roads in Alabama and never see it all.
Shoot some pictures and put it in scattered brains and scattered showers.
Yes.
As a footnote, if Rex's values were correct, that is 25 degrees and a 25 mile an hour wind, his wind chill temperature was -7.
Wow.
It sounds like Rex knows how to relax too.
Yeah, he definitely figured that out, and I guess when you're in that kind of cold, it really does refresh you and make you appreciate life.
James and I would put on a light sweater.
Maybe.
I'd be wearing my heavy down jacket, I think, in that kind of weather.
I got a story off Weather Party I wanted to mention, David. You know, one of our many websites we operate here with the weather company is weatherparty.com, which is kind of a social networking site. People can submit stories and vote on them, and somebody put up one that I thought was pretty interesting. We are at the one-year anniversary of the Evansville, Indiana tornado that killed 20 people. And one of those that died was a two-year-old. And the mom of that young child that was killed is starting a campaign. She has become a vocal advocate for children's issues and mobile home safety. And she is now starting to make a drive to create a state law in Indiana that requires all mobile homes to be equipped with weather radios. How about
good for her.
That?
Man.
Let me tell you what, this is a great story, and her name is Catherine Martin, and it's got a picture of her in this article, which is in the IndyStar.com. The link is off weatherparty.com, and she's holding a picture of her two-year-old son that was killed. And you know, after so many of these horrible tornadoes, you typically get the politicians, you know, these loudmouth blah, blah, blahs that come in there. And what do they want to do? Put up sirens, right? I mean, 99% of them want to put up sirens, where all of a sudden now we've got a mom that is still grieving the loss of her child, doing the right thing and trying to get this thing pushed through. So I would sure like to think that somebody in Montgomery would latch onto this and maybe consider for our state, but I sure wish her the best of luck. And again, her name's Catherine Martin, and you can read the story over on weatherparty.com.
Can you imagine how many lives that might save, taking a tragedy such as what she's had to go through and turn that into something positive? So I hope that's successful.
Absolutely. And she knew of some others that did have a weather radio that did save their life. They got the warning and they got out. And you know, that most people that die in this state and in most states are either in mobile homes or vehicles when a tornado blows through here. And for us to get a weather radio in every mobile home, that's a that would be a huge step toward preventing loss of life. So again, it's just a big you go get them, girl, and I hope she keeps on keeping on up there.
Good deal. A reminder that the opinions you hear expressed here on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. If you'd like to contact us, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. We would love to hear from you. If you want to leave a voicemail, we'd love for you to do that too. The number is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482. On behalf of James Spann, J.B. Elliott, Brian Peters, I'm David Black. We thank you for listening and hope you can join us again for the next Netcast edition of Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios. Guys, enjoyed that.
There's a report here that many roads in the Mobile area are flooded.
They are getting soaked down there, aren't they?
Yeah.
All right, y'all be good.
You guys have a good evening.
Bye. All right.
Bye, y'all. Bye-bye.